Sai Ram, and welcome dear listeners to the Radio Sai Answering Booth. I am Preem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and I offer on behalf of all of us humble pranams at Swami's lotus feet. Radio Sai Answering Booth is a show where we explore Bhagwan's message through questions posed by you listeners. And these are not purely philosophical questions to understand certain concepts better, but more importantly, questions on practical issues and scenarios we face in life. And in my opinion, the latter is more important. For it is when we ask, how do I apply spirituality or Swami's message to this situation I am facing, we are actually bringing the wisdom from out of the book into our everyday life. When we say spirituality, the key word there is spirit, which means the essence or the substratum. In Sanskrit, we use the word adhyatma, where the key word is atma, and atma does not simply mean the soul. Atma is all pervasive, the essential truth. So when we try to look for spiritual solutions to our problems, it is not that we are taking recourse in religion or some inexplicable irrational superstitions, but it means we are trying to get to the root of the problem. A bad doctor will only cure the symptoms of your ailment and give you instant but ephemeral relief. But a good doctor will use your symptoms to understand the real problem and treat the very cause of the symptoms, isn't it? When we seek a spiritual means to solve or handle our problems, we are trying to get to the spirit of the problem rather than just be happy treating the symptoms. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Adhyatma Vidya Vidyanam, which means, of all the different types of knowledges, I am spiritual knowledge. And that is why Swami's solutions, Swami's suggestions and Swami's ways of handling our problems are not through worldly methods but through spiritual knowledge. And need I say, it is definitely the best. Yes, they will not be the easiest or the most pleasant always, but they are certainly the most effective. And a guru's words are not always meant to give pleasure and joy. A beautiful guru shloka goes, Agnyanadimirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun melitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Agnyanatimirandasya, the blindness caused by the darkness of ignorance. Jnananjana shalakaya, by applying the collirium of wisdom, chakshurun melitam yena, he opens our eyes to light. Tasmai shri gurave namaha. To this guru I offer my pranams. Imagine you are in a dark room for many, many years. Someone comes into the room and suddenly switches on the light. Will it not irritate you at first? Will you not get uncomfortable for a few minutes? Same is the case when the guru drags us into the light after we've been for years and years in darkness. It will make us extremely uncomfortable. Swami's words, message, discourse and expectations must churn us from within. It is only through this disconcerting process the amritam or the nectar can be obtained. If you sit on the edge of the ocean and leisurely fish with a fishing rod, you will only get fish. If you want the elixir, you have to be prepared to disturb the peace of the ocean and churn it. So when Swami's words churn our life, when it puts us through pain and unpleasantness, let's thank Swami from the bottom of our hearts, for He is doing us the highest of favors. Well, I know that was a rather long introduction, but guess what? We are going to dive straight into the question for now. I'm not going to be reading a quote for you in the beginning like I usually do, but I do have a quote, and I will be reading that out after the question. Well, just a little bit of change, I guess. So let's head to the question of the week. Let me tell you, it's a very, very interesting one. The question, dear listeners, today, as I said, is a very interesting one, but more than that, from a very interesting person. The question has come to us from Sharjah, and the questioner has been very kind to send it across in her own sweet voice. So let us first listen to her question, then we'll try to answer.
Sai Ram, I'm Srinidhi. I am 10 years old. I have a question. Every night before going to sleep, I hug my mother and I feel utmost love for her. My mother says Swami's love is that of 1,000 mothers' love, but I have not seen Swami. How do I feel love for Him? How can I know His love for me?
Thank you for that sweet question, Srinidhi. Not only is it a sweet one, it's a very, very good and important question too. So thank you for that. I'm sure many of our other listeners also will benefit by the question that you've asked. And before I answer the question, I'll tell you the very thought that you wanted to ask this question itself is a starting point for you to understand what you have to do to love Swami. I'll come to that later, but to start with, maybe we should first ask ourselves why you feel so much love for your mother. Why all of us feel so much love for our mothers compared to anybody else whom we interact with in our life, right? From the time you could understand things, recognize people, you've constantly seen this thing happening to you, that is your mother taking care of you. She's cooking things that you like, she's getting you things that you want, she's dressing you up beautifully. So automatically you tend to develop love for her because no one else in the world is so much worried about you and your happiness more than her, isn't it? You may have brothers and sisters, you may have friends in your school, but they don't love you like your mother. They also have their own likes and dislikes, you know. Especially when you have brothers and sisters around, you'll understand what I'm saying. You know, even when we were kids, at home we used to fight for a particular chair on the dining table. We would fight for a particular side on the bed to sleep on. Because though there is a lot of love between brothers and sisters, that love is not as selfless as the mother's love. Your mother will always try to give you the best, make you happy. It's a different kind of love altogether. It's very, very pure and selfless. And that is why even though there are many people around you who love you, a mother's love is very special. And, you know, Srinidhi, your love for your mother is not because she loves you like this and she takes care of you. It is because you know that she loves you. I know that's a little bit confusing, but let me try to explain. See, now you're about 10 years old, right? See, when you were very, very young, less than a year old, say maybe a few weeks old, you're a small infant. Even then, your mother loved you the same way. And in fact, she took more care of you than now, because she could never leave your side and she had to look at you all through the day and sometimes even all through the night. But you know, at that time, you were not aware of it. As a baby, you would have smiled at whoever came to you. Anyone puts out their hand, you would have held it tight. Right? It's not like you understand that this person is a mother and, you know, she loves you more than anybody else. But of course, you may not remember it now, but you can ask your mother, she will tell you. If not, you can look around and see any baby of that age, maybe a few weeks old baby. You would see that they are naturally very cheerful. They will be smiling at everybody who comes to them because they don't start recognizing people's faces yet. But slowly as you grow up, you start recognizing one individual as your mother, someone else as your father, then somebody else as your sister and others in your family, right? And as you started observing people and connecting their actions to their faces, you experience and you come to the understanding that your mother's love is the way, just as I described some time back, right? How she takes care of you, she's always looking to give you the best, she wants to dress you up and all of that. You associated with this person who's a mother, and as you came to know of your mother's love, you started feeling love towards her. Though your mother loved you from much before, even when you were a little child, she became special to you after you started knowing that she loves you. In the same way, you can apply this to Swami's love as well. And your mother is absolutely right when she says that Swami has the love of 1,000 mothers. Well, what does that mean then? What did I tell you why a mother's love is special? It's because a mother's love is so selfless, right? And also, your mother is very, very patient with you. You could do any number of mistakes. She will patiently keep correcting you. Yes, she may get angry once in a while, but she'll never leave you and go, right? You might have some friends in school who might stop talking to you if you trouble them too much. But your mother will always forgive you and will give you all the time for you to correct yourself. And that is the quality we refer to as patience. So when we say that Swami has the love of 1,000 mothers, it means Swami is 1,000 times more selfless and 1,000 times more patient with us. And just like how when you were very, very little, though your mother loved you, you could not recognize it. Right now, though Swami loves you now, you are not aware of it. So since you're not aware of it, you are not able to feel that love for Swami, or you are not able to love Swami the way you love your mother. You know, many people go to temples, do puja, go for bhajans, but not all of them really love God. Most people are actually scared of God and they better want to please Him so that Swami will do favors for them. But if you want to love Swami, you must first realize how much Swami loves you. And when love for Swami comes, then you really don't have to fear Swami or fear God at all. So the question is, what do we do? Right? As you are saying, you've not seen Swami, you don't feel Swami's love, so how do you develop that love for Swami? Well, before we try to find out ways of doing that, remember this point. It's like this. The more you see how Swami is taking care of you, the more you see how Swami is caring for you, just like how your mother is caring for you, the more you will love Swami. And the more you love Swami, the more and more you will see how from the smallest to the biggest thing in your life is being done by Swami Himself. So it's almost like a self-serving circle. If you know that Swami loves you, you will love Swami more. And the more you love Swami, the more you will see how Swami's love is playing in your life. The question is, how do we enter this cycle? Right? So where do we begin? To start with, even if you're not able to see, understand this one point, just accept it for now, that whoever loves you and cares for you in your life is actually giving you Swami's love. Which means, Swami is loving you through all these people like your mother, father, sister, friends, teachers, grandparents. Though there are different people, the love that is coming to you is only Swami's love. The best example I can think of giving you is, now imagine in your house you must be having taps all over the place, right? You must have a tap in the bathroom, you'll have taps in your kitchen, you'll have taps in your garden. But you know the water comes from only the same overhead tank. You have one overhead tank on your terrace probably, and there are different pipes through which this water travels, and there are different taps through which you access this water. In the same way, Swami's love is like that water in the overhead tank. But these people through whom you find love, through your mother, through your grandparents, through your friends, these are all like different taps through which the same water comes. The tap is never the source of the water, it is only an instrument or a channel for that water, right? So even your mother's love, which you can so much understand and relate to, is actually Swami's love coming to you through your mother. Well, as I said, you may or may not be able to understand this or accept this, but for now, just take this as a theory, right? And if you accept this, it also means that the love that you show your mother actually reaches Swami, whether or not you realize it. So the first step is something which you already may be doing. Love all those who love you, especially your mother, because that love reaches Swami directly. Then loving doesn't mean just hugging and kissing your mother. Loving your mother is obeying her and trying your best to please her, right? But the love that you show different people will be slightly different. The way you show love to your mother by obeying her, it's not the way you show love to your friends. It's not necessary that you should obey your friends in whatever they tell you. When it comes to your friends, it comes to being pleasant with them, being friendly with them, and probably sharing whatever you have with them, right? Not fighting with them. And that becomes a form of loving your friends. Let's say you're walking on the road and you see a poor person. Now, loving this person does not mean going and hugging that person necessarily, but being kind and compassionate, or maybe even trying to, you know, appease his hunger by giving him some food. So in that way, giving love to different people is slightly different, but however different the ways of giving love, how many of the different people who are receiving love from you, remember that all the love that you give anyway reaches only Swami. But there will also be people who do not show love to you. There will be people who are unpleasant to you. So should you not show love to them? Of course, you have to show love to them also. But here, what happens is, you become the instrument of Swami's love. As I said, when your mother loves you, she is the instrument of Swami's love. Now, when you love others, especially those who may not be kind to you, you become the instrument of Swami's love. And, as I said, it's like a cycle. The more you love Swami, you may not realize that your love is reaching Swami, but the more you love Swami, the more you will see Swami's love in your everyday life. So in this stage, even though you do not realize what you're doing, that you're loving Swami, it's fine. When you go through this, it prepares you, right? But Srinidhi, there's one important thing that you should remember. See, love for God, or what we call as bhakti, it is not like a skill or an ability, right? It is not something that you can acquire. It is not like a talent in music or dance which you can go to a class and learn. You cannot learn to love Swami. You cannot have devotion to Swami. Yes, all that I said, that you should love all those who love you, you should love even those who are not loving to you, all that prepares you, right? It prepares your heart to receive Swami's love and to be able to love Swami, but it will not give you true love for Swami. So what is the whole point? What should you do then, right? The only way out is you will have to pray to Swami to give you love for Swami. Swami would many times tell us, devotion to Swami is always a gift from Swami. It is not something that you can develop. So you have to pray to Swami that, Swami, I would like to love you. I would like to learn to love you. I would like to have love for you. The same way I love Swami, I love my mother, I would like to love Swami. Right? You know, Swami used to tell us, you come to God and you ask God for things that you can anyway earn yourself or you can get from others. You ask God for wealth. Well, if you work hard, you can earn money, right? Why do you come to God and ask for that? You ask God for marks. If you study hard, you can get more marks, right? And sometimes you come to God and ask for health. Well, yeah, you can go to a doctor for that. Or you come asking for promotion in your job or many things like this. But Swami says you can earn through your own effort or by seeking from another person. Why ask God for things that you can get by your own effort or from others? Swami would say, ask God for that which only God can give. Ask Swami for that which only Swami can give. And that is what we call bhakti or devotion. So every time you pray, every time you sing bhajans, every time you go to a temple, pray to Swami. Swami, give me love for you. Swami, give me love for you. You know, we don't have to ask for His love. Many times we think that we need to go in front of Swami and say, Swami, please give me your love. Because Swami loves all of us. As I said, we are all like that little child who has no idea that Swami is already loving us. So there is no point in us going and asking, Swami, please love us. That is actually unnecessary to ask. Instead, what we really need to ask is, Swami, please give me love for you. And once Swami gives you that love, you will see that more and more how Swami cares for you in the smallest and the biggest things of your life. And the more you see it, the more you'll feel love for Swami. You know, Srinidhi, when you now you say that you hug your mother and you go to sleep, doesn't it feel so nice? Doesn't it make you feel so warm within? Believe me, when you feel love for Swami, you will feel 1,000 times more nice. Life will become so very beautiful. You will see that Swami's love and care everywhere. And the beauty is, you know, even now your mother probably must be getting angry with you once in a while, maybe even scolding or shouting at you once in a while. But after some time when you look at it, you will know that even that she does out of her love. You know, many years ago when we were doing this children's hour, when we used to speak to children, we would ask them, does your mother shout at you? Does your father shout at you? They will say yes once in a while. And if we ask them, isn't it bad that your mother shouts at you? The child would say, no, she shouts at me only when I do a mistake. Which means even you know that when a mother even gets upset with you, she's doing it out of love. Right? Similarly, when you go through life, you will see that everything that happens to you, some things might be pleasant, some things might not be as pleasant as other things. But you will realize that all of that is out of Swami's love. He is giving it to you. And when you understand that, you will feel so very special and life will become so beautiful. But for that, as I said, to start with, you need to show love to everybody who shows love to you. Your mother, your father, your sister, everybody around. And as much as possible, show love to even those who probably don't have much love to show you, right? Even to them, if you can be loving, then your heart gets prepared to receive Swami's love as well as love Swami. And after that, you will have to pray to Swami to give you that love. And Swami would tell that it is God who gives love, and not only does He give love, He'll give you love, He will give you the strength or faith to hold on to that love, and eventually Swami says, I will hold your hand and take you till your destination. So those are the three points, but before I conclude the answer, You know, there's one point that you made, Srinidhi, that, you know, you said how to love Swami when you have not seen Swami. Well, I spoke of you when you were a very, very little child, probably a few weeks old, isn't it? Do you know where you were even before you were that little child? Let me take you back some more time. You know, when you were in your mother's tummy, or what we call the mother's womb, right? At that time, you were inside your mother. And did you know that when you were inside your mother, you could actually not see your mother? You did not see your mother outside like how you see her now? Does that mean that your mother, when you were in your mother's womb, your mother was before you, behind you, above you, below you, and all around you, isn't it? Similarly, we cannot see Swami because He is all around us. We are in Swami's womb. We are like children of Swami, inside Swami. And that is why Swami would say, I am above you, below you, before you, behind you, and all around you. But if we pray hard enough, Swami will assume a form which is very, very beautiful and come before us. Right? That is how we all saw Swami. Because Swami chose to show Himself to us in a beautiful form. But whether we are able to see Swami or not able to see Swami, Swami always loves us and we are like in Swami's womb. So remember that you don't need to see Swami really to love Swami, but you can ask Swami for that love and Swami will definitely give it to you. In fact, as I said, the first point is this desire to want to love Swami, right? Even if you are not able to, the desire to want to love Swami, and that is what has prompted you to ask this very question, isn't it? That is why to be able to ask this question is the first step. To say that, Swami, people say that you have the love of 1,000 mothers, why am I not able to feel that love for you? Why am I not able to love you the way I love my mother? And that question is the starting point, is the first step. So don't stop at asking that question. Make it a prayer. Make it a desire that you are so desperate to fulfill. So every time you go in front of Swami's picture, every time you pray, maybe you're praying before your food, maybe you're praying before you go to sleep, maybe you're praying even before writing an exam. Make this also a part of that prayer. Say that, Swami, I would like to love you the way you love me. I would like to have love for you just like how you love me. And once you do that, be sure that you will get into that cycle which I spoke about. That is, you will start feeling love for Swami. And the more you have love for Swami, you will see Swami's hand in every act, every small incident of your life. The more you see Swami's hand in your life, the more and more you will start loving Swami. So thank you very much, Srinidhi, for that beautiful question. And I hope I've given you some understanding, some clarity. If my answer was too long and you did not understand, you can always write back to me. I'll try to explain further, probably on the program or at least by mail. Okay? So thank you so much for asking that question. So that, dear listeners, was the question from Srinidhi from Sharjah, 10-year-old. But that question was not a 10-year-old question. You'll agree with me. It's a beautiful question and gave us an opportunity to dwell on something which is equally important for all of us. But now, as I said, the quote for the day, I pushed it after the question because the quote is a little big one and I thought I'll speak a little more about the quote than I usually do. The quote is by philosopher Albert Schweitzer. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, but it's a very beautiful quote. So first I will read out the quote for you and then I'll share my thoughts on the quote. I quote, "The power of ideals is incalculable. We see no power in a drop of water, but let it get into a crack in the rock and be turned into ice, and it splits the rock. Turn it into steam, it drives the pistons of the most powerful engines. Something has happened to it which makes active and effective the power that is latent in it. So it is with ideals. Ideals are thoughts. So long as they exist merely as thoughts, the power latent in them remains ineffective. However great the enthusiasm and however strong the conviction with which the thought is held. Their power becomes effective only when they are taken up into some refined human personality. End of quote. As you all would have understood, it's about the power of idealism, the power of ideals or human values, as we've heard from Swami. The interesting thing about that quote is he makes a comparison with a drop of water. And usually we look at water as something which is very weak, which can take the shape of anything it is put in. It can flow in any direction it is thrown in. But yes, within this apparently powerless water is some phenomenal power. And the example which he gives is really telling. He says, when water gets into the crack of a rock and it turns into ice, it can split the rock itself. In fact, very interestingly, this was the technique which was used to build temples out of rock in the past. I was seeing a documentary, a very interesting one. It was about some of these ancient temples in India, especially the temples in South India, some of the cave temples like the one in Ellora. And they were wondering, how did the people in the past break such huge rocks into two halves or the number of small pieces? Because these were huge, multi-ton weighing rocks, and some of them were made of granite, which was the hardest rocks. How did they ever break it? And then when they started exploring, they found these rocks which were being prepared to be broken in the past, and it was left like that probably because the temple construction was finished. And that's how they figured out how they split rocks. And you know, how did they do it? They would make a small hole in the rock with the help of a chisel, probably about 2 inches deep, and they would make rows of such holes in the rock in a straight line, right? And after they do that, they would hammer in wooden wedges into those holes. And you would form, and you would have a clean line of holes which are made in a straight line with wooden hedges hammered into them. And then they would do, what they would do is, they would pour water into those wooden wedges. And we all know what happens when water enters wood. It starts expanding the wood, right? The wood starts expanding. And can you believe it? That is how the rock itself would split open. And that was how much power was there in that simple few drops of water, which we think is actually powerless, right? And that's what he says. Just like the power of water when it enters into a crack and it becomes ice is immeasurable compared to a normal drop of water, he says the power of ideals also is like that. If it is held only in thought, if it is held only as an understanding, you think of it and you kind of praise it and you say, oh, you know, ideals are so great, human values are so great, we have conferences on human values, we speak about it, we lecture about it. You only hold these values high in your thoughts. That is not when they are actually powerful. But when this power, this really becomes powerful, or the power inside becomes effective, he says only when they are taken up in some refined human personality. Or can I put it that only through practice. It is only through practice they actually become powerful. Swami would often speak about two concepts in his discourses, which is very, very important. He would say Shreyas and Prayas. Shreyas being that which is the path which needs to be taken, and Prayas refers to the pleasant path or the easier path. And whenever Swami speaks about dharma or righteous living, Swami would make reference to these two terms of Shreyas and Prayas. And interestingly, if you look at it, there is one quality difference between these two, which more often than not defines these two. Prayas is something which when you do, you get immediate benefit from. Let us say you are in a long line and you need to bribe the person who is at the counter to get quick access to whatever you're looking to get. There you get immediate benefit, but Swami says that is the wrong path. That is the pleasant path, you get it done easily, but that becomes prayas. And Shreyas is when you give up the immediate benefit to do what is right, what has to be done, the way it has to be done. Swami says that is Shreyas. And even as we go through life, constantly we will be given this choice between Shreyas and prayas, and we need to keep choosing Shreyas over prayas. Well, that's interesting, and that's easier said than done. Because most often in life, we are pushed to the corner and we always want to make the choice which is easier and which gives immediate benefit. None of us have the patience to wait to see the whole thing happen. Just like the example of the water and ice, just like the example of what water has in it as potency, most often the effect of that takes a long time to achieve. Even the idea of breaking rocks through that water, I'm sure it's an effective process, but it's a slow process nonetheless. And that's the way it is with everything in nature. So when you choose Shreyas over prayers, invariably you choose the long-standing benefit over the immediate benefit. But the beauty is when you bring in the concept of devotion, when you bring in the concept of Swami or God into the picture. Because the moment you bring God into the picture, Swami would often say, Swami makes it very clear that this is how I want you to lead your life, Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema. And now when you start leading your life all the time choosing Shreyas over prayers, yes, the immediate benefit is lost. You probably might lose in the short term. But when you choose Shreyas, you say that this is what I need to do because this is what will please Swami. This is what I need to do because I get pleasure when I do things according to Swami's ways. You are replacing the absence of that immediate benefit with another immediate benefit which probably will not come with prayers, right? You probably will not get your work done fast. You probably will have to struggle longer to get your way. But you replace it with this immediate benefit of feeling self-satisfaction and feeling a higher sense of achievement where you feel that there was a weaker option in front of me but I took the tougher option and I did it because out of my love for Swami. So in the absence of an immediate benefit when you take Shreyas, Swami offers this benefit which cannot come in any other means. And Swami thereby makes it easier, but nonetheless it needs a lot of inner strength. But when that choice is made constantly, the power that it gives is enormous. An example which I can think of, which I read somewhere, and I've quoted this on radio before, but probably I'll re-narrate it now. We all know Mr. V.K. Narasimhan, you must have heard his name. He was the editor of the Sanatan Sarthi. After Professor Kasturi, he was the person. But before he became the editor of Sanatan Sarthi, he was editor of one of the leading Indian newspapers, the Indian Express. And if you are a follower of Indian history, you would know that the post-independence, the problem which we faced, one of the biggest hurdles that we faced was during the emergency period when the government decided that all press freedom will be withdrawn. At that time, V.K. Narasimhan was the editor of Indian Express, and he was one of those editors who stood strong and he confronted the government, and he would not obey the orders which would come from above. And you know what would happen if you take a stance like that. He said, no, this is the right thing to do. This is the righteous act to do. And so I will do it. And eventually what happened is he lost his job. The government put pressure on the owners of the newspaper who eventually had to throw him out of job. And the other people who were involved in the working of the paper were very disturbed by this because they all knew him. He was a man of great principles. He was a man of great power. And many years later, one of the journalists who had worked very closely with Kuldeep Nair, who had worked with V.K. Narasimhan, again, a veteran journalist. He was narrating about this incident, how he was so disturbed by this whole thing. So he went to the owners of the paper and he said that this is not right what you've done. You should bring him back. And it was decided that Kuldeep Nair would go to V.K. Narasimhan and speak to him because they all knew that he was a young man nonetheless and he had a family to take care. In those days, if you are a journalist, you don't make much money. So they all knew that he also needed the job very much. And being thrown out of a job at that time means that you're not going to find a job very easily again because you have rubbed the wrong side of the government, right? So Kuldeep Nair says that he goes to V.K. Narasimhan's house in thinking what he will tell him to calm him down. Maybe he must be a very disturbed man, a very depressed man. But Kuldeep Nair says that even as he enters the house, he hears laughter from within. And he's surprised. He's entering the house where there is a disaster of sorts that has happened. The bread earner of the family has lost his job and probably is not going to find a job for the next few months. And even as he enters the house, he hears laughter. And he says that he walks into the house And he finds that V.K. Narasimhan and his wife sitting on the floor of the kitchen, a very, very badly furnished home. There was nothing extravagant about the house. But this couple, who were probably facing a huge disaster in their life, was sitting casually on the floor of the kitchen, sipping a cup of coffee each and cracking some jokes and laughing with each other. And Kuldeep Nair says that he walked into the house thinking that he is going to give some courage to V.K. Narasimhan and his family, but he found there, in his words, he says beautifully, "I found there a man standing on the strength of values. I saw a man who can be the way he was, absolutely casual and proud and brave about what he had done because he was a man of values." And he says, that is the power of values. Even a government cannot snatch that power away from you. And that is the beautiful quote which I read out from Albert Schweitzer. It's not about, you know, Swami would often say this, and whenever Swami would say, I would wonder what it really means. Swami said that dharma never declines, only the practice of dharma declines. Dharma is always powerful. What it means is there could be thousands and thousands of years of unrighteousness and adharma, and the society might not be able to follow it. But even after 1,000 years, if an individual stands up and says, I will follow dharma, he will get the benefit. Because dharma never declines, only the practice of dharma declines. The power of ideals never decline. It is only we become weak to hold on to those values. So before we conclude this week's program, permit me, dear listeners, to read out that very, very powerful quote of Albert Schweitzer, and I invite all of you to ponder over these words, because he is talking of something, a power which can be experienced only when you practice it. You can hear me read it again, I can read it over and over again for myself, but unless you and I practice it, we will never understand the true power of the ideals and values he speaks about. So permit me to quote Albert Schweitzer once again. I quote, "The power of ideals is incalculable. We see no power in a drop of water, but let it get into a crack in the rock and be turned into ice, and it splits the rock. Turned into steam, it drives the pistons of the most powerful engines. Something has happened to it which makes active and effective the power that is latent in it. So it is with ideals. Ideals are thoughts. So long as they exist merely as thoughts, the power latent in them remains ineffective. However great the enthusiasm and however strong the conviction with which the thought is held, their power becomes effective only when they are taken up into some refined human personality." With that, dear listeners, it's a wrap on this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. Do you have a question which you would like us to feature on this program? Then do write to us. You can write to me directly at prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. Well, it's my personal mail ID, so the mails that you send to this ID will be read only by me, so confidentiality is guaranteed. And so if you wish to be anonymous, you want your question to be answered, but you don't want your name to be revealed, then you can let me know. I'll comply to that. Once again, thanks to Srinidhi, the 10-year-old from Sharjah, who sent us such a beautiful question. So I'm hoping to get more questions from all of you. I'll join you again next week for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. But I'm going to leave you with a song. Well, the question today was about mother's love and Swami as mother. So I'm going to leave you with a song which is quite apt for that theme. On the other side of it, after some time, you'll be joined by Brother Raghu for the segment Ashtotram. At 12:30, I'll be here with Arvind for the next episode of Afternoon Satsang with an interesting topic. I'm sure you all will enjoy it. But I'll join you again at 11 a.m. next week for Radio Sai Answering Booth.
సాయిమా ప్రియమైన బంధమా ప్రేమకు రూపమా మాందరి ప్రాణమా ఓ సాయిమా గడిచే ప్రతీక్షణం నీతోని గడపాలని మేము వినే పదాలని మాటలు కావాలని గడిచే ప్రతీక్షణం నీతోని గడపాలని మేము వినే పదాలన్నీ నీ మాటలే కావాలని మాలోని తలపులన్నీ నీకు వివరించాలని క్రియలన్నీ
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
तेरा नाम लेके चेहरे पे रंगे बहार आती है तुम ही से पाऊं खुशियां जो भी आया तुमने खुशियों से झोली भरी है तेरे दर पे जो भी आया ओ मेरे साईं बाबा खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है झोली भरी है ओ बाबा झोली भरी है खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है नजरे उठी है तेरे जलवे में तेरे इन कदमों में जन्नत बसी है
तुझ में हमारी सांसें बसी है तुझ में हमारी सांसें बसी है
तेरे दर पे जो भी आया ओ मेरे साई बाबा खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है
मोहब्बत ने भर दी है दूरी दिलों की
साईं के बंदे
अब हम हुए हैं सामान दनी दमगर गरे
निधर
मोहब्बत ने भर दी है दूरी दिलों की,
मोहब्बत ने भर दी है दूरी दिलों की,
दूरी दिलों की ओ बाबा दूरी दिलों की, मोहब्बत ने भर दी है दूरी दिलों की,
मोहब्बत ने भर दी है दूरी दिलों की।
आया है जब से ये प्यार तुम्हारा, तेरे लिए जीते और हम मिटे हैं,
तुझसे हमारी जिंदगी बनी है, तुझसे हमारी जिंदगी बनी है।
तेरे दर पे जो भी आया ओ मेरे साईं बाबा, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है।
तेरे दर पे जो भी आया ओ मेरे साईं बाबा, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है,
खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है,
झोली भरी है ओ बाबा, झोली भरी है, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है,
खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है,
तेरे दर पे जो भी आया ओ मेरे साईं बाबा, खुशियों से तुमने सबकी झोली भरी है,
खुशियों से तुमने सबकी
मेरे साईं,
इस बेचैन दुनिया को देख ना रहा मेरे गम का ठिकाना, कि लोगों ने अब तक ये न जाना साई नाम अनमोल खजाना,
जब प्राण तन से जाएंगे छूट,
मेरे साईं बाबा तेरा हम नाम लेंगे, तुझे है कसम हमारी तेरे लिए जान देंगे,
साईं नाम सारा जग देखो गुनगुनाएगा,
मेरे साईं बाबा तेरा हम नाम लेंगे तेरे लिए जान देंगे, कान देंगे
तेरे लिए संग रहकर, तुम्हें को कान देंगे तेरे लिए संग रहकर, तुम्हें को कान देंगे,
किसाई नाम सारा जग देखो गुनगुनाएगा, तो मेरे साईं बाबा तेरा हम नाम लेंगे तेरे लिए जान देंगे, तो मेरे साईं बाबा
جھیل سے تیری اکھیاں پیار بھرا تیرا چہرہ تیری مسکان سے سائی چہروں پہ رونق آئی
تیری ایک نظر سے سائی دلوں میں خوشی سمائی
دلوں میں خوشی سمائی دلوں میں خوشی سمائی
تیرے اس روپ کو دیکھ کرو بابا میرے ہر ایک انسان تجھ پر آج قربان
تیرے اس روپ کو دیکھ کر سائی میرے
تمہاری ہنسی ہے پیاری امانت بنے ہماری مہکو کی زندگانی
تمہاری ہنسی ہے پیاری امانت بنے ہماری
تمہاری ہنسی ہے پیاری امانت بنے ہماری
کبھی نہ چھوٹے داستانے
محبت کی میرے سائی بابا تیرا ہم نام لیں گے تیرے لیے جان دیں گے او میرے سائی بابا
دیکھو سائی نام نے کیا جادو کیا ہے
کہ جس کسی نے تیرے نام کا پیالہ پیا ہے
دیکھو اسے کیا انجان نشہ آتا ہے
کہ غم اور خوشی تو کیا
خود کو بھی بھول جاتا ہے
خود کو بھول جاتا ہے خود کو بھول جاتا ہے
خود کو بھول جاتا ہے خود کو بھول جاتا ہے
سائی نام کے پیالے جو چاہے اجما لے یہ سائی نام کے پیالے
جو چاہے اجما لے سائی نام کے پیالے جو چاہے اجما لے سائی نام کے پیالے
ہر غم کو خوشی میں یہ بدلنے والے جو چاہے اجما لے یہ سائی نام کے پیالے
مگر اس دنیا کا ایک بڑا سوال ہے
وہ کیا پوچھو تو اس جلتے ہوئے زمانے کا دیکھو کیا حال ہے
تڑپ رہا ہے انسان دیہ کی مشال ہے
ہر کسی کی زندگی غم سے بے حال ہے
دنیا کا یہ سوال ہے یہ غم سے بے حال ہے دنیا کا یہ سوال ہے
یہ تو کمال ہے کہ انسان کا یہ سوال ہے
جب انسان انسان ہی نہ رہا
وہ تو بن گیا حیوان وہ تو بن گیا حیوان
سبھی کا امتحان وہ تو بن گیا حیوان ہے
پھر بھی اگر جو بچنے کا ہے تیرا ارادہ
بھگوان تک پہنچنے کا ہے تیرا ارادہ
تو کر لے سائی نام لینے کا تو آج وعدہ
سائی نام سارا جگ دیکھو گنگنائے گا
میرے سائی بابا تیرا سب نام لیں گے تیرے لیے جان دیں گے او
मेरे साईं बाबा।